Welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Monday, February 8th on Iris. I'm your reader, Erin. Our first article on the front page. Love That Last, a counting series featuring tri-state couples married 50 plus years. Couple credits compromise for 68 years. John and Belinda Winan have lived by a give-and-take mantra for nearly seven decades, by Annie Mell, Galena, Illinois. When she was young, Wanda Cruz would admire her parents from afar while they danced. Whether it was at a wedding or another event, anywhere music was playing, Belinda and John Winan would get up and dance together. After all, it was dancing that sparked their relationship more than 60 years ago. But it wasn't until years later that Cruz realized it was her mom who led during every dance. It was something Cruz said was symbolic of their relationship. Quote, "It's that give and take," end quote, she said. Quote, "When one was stronger than the other would take the lead. To be a ballroom dancer, you have to have respect. That's what they have," end quote. After 68 years of marriage, Belinda, who is 90 years old, and John Winan, who is 92 years old, have continued to practice that same give-and-take mantra, and they still share a love for dancing. Belinda and John both grew up outside of Galena, Illinois, and their families knew one another through church. Before John left to serve the United States Army, they went on a date to see a movie. Quote, "I remember being excited about getting a date," Belinda said. "He picked me up and my mother was waiting," end quote. John served in the Army for 3 years. When he returned, he and Belinda ran into each other at what was then the Royal Palace in Galena, a popular dance hall. It was a Valentine's dance in 1952. During the evening, Belinda remembers winking at John. Quote, "He was nice looking," end quote, she said. John said he couldn't remember what he thought about Belinda at the time, but he laughed and said, quote, "I guess I was getting desperate," end quote. They married that October and went on to have two daughters. Through the years, they traveled to places such as Sweden, where Belinda's father grew up, and other parts of Europe. They vacationed in Florida and for several months of the year for about 20 years, Belinda said. Quote, "We've had some wonderful trips together," end quote, she said. John worked 6 days a week for his family's business, E. Winan & Sons Construction Company, but Sundays were special for Cruz and her sister, Denise Stadel. After church, they would all go fishing together, Cruz recalled. Quote, "We got to have Dad with us for an afternoon," end quote, she said. Cruz said she never felt limited because of her gender when she was growing up. If she wanted to do something, her parents supported her. Quote, "If I wanted to do something, they never told me no," she said. "The world was open to me. I never really realized that women didn't do certain things. The world back in the 50s and 60s, women didn't do as much, like go to college. Mom and Dad never said no to those kinds of dreams," end quote. Stadel said she can't remember a time her parents ever bickered. Quote, "I am so glad that I have them as my parents," she said. "Dad could fix anything, and Mom was the best cook. It was just neat to see them have their fun times," end quote. Belinda said she thinks dating and marriage was easier 68 years ago than it is now. Her advice for new couples is this. It's all about compromise, just like their dancing style. It's give and take. One leads and one follows. Quote, "You need to be tolerant of each other," she said. "There are two individual minds there. They are different. I've had a good life, and that's a lot to be thankful for. We just worked at it and kept going," end quote. Our next front page article, Biz Buzz, Dubuque Sign Businesses Help Residents Mark Special Occasions by Jeff Montgomery, Telegraph Business Editor. Biz Buzz shares business tidbits from the tri-states. In addition to this update from Dubuque, we will highlight developments from Hanover, Illinois and Cuba City in Wisconsin in Tuesday's edition. Two new Dubuque businesses are adding some extra flair to special occasions in the tri-state area. Dubuque resident Jill Keck launched Card Your Yard Dubuque in November. In the months since, the company's sizable, weather-resistant yard signs have graced local residents' front lawns with a wide range of celebrations. Keck emphasized that she can personalize and customize signs to the customer's desire. Quote, "We've done signs for anniversaries, birthdays, graduations, retirements, new babies. Our signs are for anything and everyone," she said. "Our goal is to create a little extra excitement around those events," end quote. Keck's operation is one of at least two similar businesses operating in Dubuque area. Another operation, dubbed Card My Yard, launched in mid-January and started accepting online bookings last week. The businesses serve serve an elevated purpose given the nature of the past year when COVID-19 has compelled people to cancel the types of in-person gatherings that normally mark significant events. This has given rise to new concepts such as drive-by birthday parties, in which guests will join a celebration by honking or waving from the safety of their vehicle. Keck said her business's signs have been a perfect complement to these types of events. For Keck, Card Your Yard is about more than turning a profit. At the request of area residents, Keck has placed healthcare heroes signs outside of medical facilities free of charge. She hopes the sign and send an uplifting message to a segment of the population that's been under immense pressure over the course of the past 11 months. Keck also plans to supply 10 Be Kind signs around the community on February 17th to mark Random Acts of Kindness Day. The signs will be placed in the yards of random residents who then have the chance to pass along the kindness by placing them elsewhere. Quote, anything that helps with the community makes me feel good, she said. Bringing joy is my number one goal, end quote. Keck said Card Your Yard serves residents within a 15-mile radius of Dubuque. It can be reached at 563-580-4075. It can also be followed at facebook.com/cardyouryarddubuque. Local resident Peggy Newman started a similar operation nearly 1 month ago. Her local operation is part of the National Card My Yard franchise. After working in the corporate world for 21 years, Newman came to the realization that she wanted to try something new. She learned about Card My Yard by reading a blog post on Instagram. Quote, I fell in love with the company and the concept and decided this was something I wanted to be a part of, end quote, she said. Newman's franchise serves Dubuque, Peosta, Sherrill, and Durango, Iowa, as well as East Dubuque, Illinois, and Hazel Green, Wisconsin. She also can serve other areas for a higher fee. Card My Yard can be reached by emailing dubuque@cardmyyard.com or by visiting cardmyyard.com. In the last front page article, city awards $100,000 in grants to 6 nonprofits. St. Mark Youth Enrichment Dream Center Riverview Center receive largest allocations by John Cruz. The city of Dubuque recently awarded $100,000 to 6 local nonprofits for a variety of programming. City council members recently approved the allocations, which went to 6 of the 15 organizations that applied. The grants will go toward funding programs managed by the organizations that were identified as beneficial for the advancement of city goals. St. Mark Youth Enrichment was awarded $25,000 to fund ongoing online sessions designed to keep students connected with their peers and the organization's staff during the COVID-19 pandemic through a variety of virtual events, including yoga and craft making. Director of Strategic Resources Caitlin Schmidt said the nonprofit seeks to continue fostering social and emotional connections for children in kindergarten through fifth grade who otherwise would be largely isolated by the pandemic. Quote, we try to keep that routine and sense of safety, Schmidt said. We don't even know the full impact that COVID will have on their social skills. It helps to have them stay connected with our staff and their peers in some way, end quote. St. Mark intends to use the funding to continue paying staff conducting the virtual sessions along with paying for supplies for activities. Crescent Community Health Center was awarded $19,500 to assist it in reviving the organization's denture program. CEO Gary Collins said the organization previously halted its program that provided dentures to clients due to limited staff and space. With additional dentists hired and having recently moved into a new building on Elm Street, Collins said the organization plans to expand its denture options once again. Quote, it's a program that will help some people get a new lease on their lives, end quote, he said. Quote, they would have a significant pain from existing teeth and need dentures, or they need existing dentures replaced or realigned. We can better help with that, end quote. Collins said the city funding will go toward covering the lab and material costs for the construction of the dentures. He added that a limited number of dentures already have been provided to clients, with plans of expanding the program throughout the year. Dubuque County Energy District receives $8,500 to fund a series of 5 meetings in March and April aimed at educating low-income residents on how they can improve energy efficiency in their homes. Program coordinator Michaela Freeberger said participants will receive a kit that comes with home energy efficiency improvement supplies. Quote, "We want to show how energy efficiency is good not just for the environment, but also their livelihood," end quote, Freeberger said. Other recipients were Convivium Urban Farmstead, which received $2,000 for the distribution of free take and bake meals, Dubuque Dream Center, which received $20,000 for mentoring services, and Riverview Center, which received $25,000 for its sexual assault and abuse crisis intervention and response program. The competition is held annually by the city and is funded through a combination of city funds and federal community development block grant funds. This year, CBDG funds covered $37,961 of the awarded grants, while the city paid for the remaining $62,039. The awarded applicants are recommended by the city's Community Development Advisory Commission. Moving to page 2 for some more local news. 15 additional COVID-19 cases in Dubuque County, Telegraph Herald. Each day, the Telegraph Herald is recapping changes in local COVID-19 testing and recovery. Sunday's developments included Dubuque County added 15 additional COVID-19 cases between 5 p.m. Saturday and 5 p.m. Sunday, increasing the county's total to 11,962. There were no additional deaths reported, so Dubuque County's death toll remained at 185. As of 5 p.m. Sunday. The county's 14-day positivity rate dropped slightly to 7.1% as of 5 p.m. Sunday. Jones County reported 8 additional cases as of 5 p.m. Sunday, with the 14-day positivity rate increasing to 10.2%. Delaware County had 3 new cases. The county's rate dropped to 7.7%. Jackson County had 2 additional cases, with the rate increasing to 12.2%. There were no additional cases reported in Clayton County, where the rate fell to 5.7%. The state did not provide updated county-level hospitalization data on Sunday. The most recent figures were as of Wednesday afternoon, when 12 Dubuque County residents were hospitalized with COVID-19. The hospitalization total for Jones County was 5, Jackson County 5, Delaware County 2, and Clayton County 0. As of 5 p.m. Sunday, only one area long-term care facility remained on the state's outbreak list. Stonehill Care Center in Dubuque has had 6 new cases during the past 14 days. Statewide, Iowa reported 504 additional cases during the 24-hour period, increasing the state's total to 324,444 by 5 p.m. Sunday. There were no additional deaths reported, so the toll remained at 5,108. In Wisconsin, Grant County reported 4 additional cases. The county's number of active cases derived by subtracting deaths and recovered patients from the total number of cases dropped by 12 to 108. Iowa County reported 3 additional cases. The state reported no additional cases for both Crawford and Lafayette counties. Statewide, Wisconsin reported 671 additional cases for a total of 549,826. The state reported 2 additional deaths, increasing the tally to 6,054. In Illinois, the state reported 1 additional case in Joe Davies County on Sunday. Statewide, Illinois reported 2,060 additional cases, increasing the state's total to 1,146,341. The state's death toll rose by 48 to 19,633. News in brief, Dubuque Foundation publishes a new cultural resource guide. The newest edition of a Dubuque resource guide aims to help local residents connect with businesses and organizations that can meet diverse culture and ethnic needs. Community Foundation of Greater Dubuque recently announced the publication of the newest version of the Dubuque Cultural Resource Guide. It was published in partnership with Greater Dubuque Development Corp. and with support from the John Deere Foundation, according to a press release. The guide contains listings of community organizations, grocery options, hair and cosmetic businesses, health services, and other resources for people from diverse backgrounds. The publication is available in both English and Spanish and can be found online at bit.ly/20EHQXQ. Those interested in suggesting a business or organization to be included in listings as they are updated can contact Clara Lopez Ortiz at clara@dbqfoundation.org or by calling 563-588-2700. third night hike by Dubuque County Conservation scheduled at New Vienna, Iowa. Dubuque County Conservation has planned a third night hike, this time between New Vienna and Dyersville. The, quote, eliminate the night, end quote, hike will take place from 6:30 to 8 p.m. February 19th at New Wine Park, 15971 New Wine Park Lane. 2 to 3 miles of the park's trails will be lit up for people to enjoy the winter scenery after sundown. Dubuque County Conservation previously held Illuminate the Night hikes at Heritage Trail in Finley's Landing. Those interested in the New Wine Park hike must register online at bit.ly/39UJXYC, as groups of hikers will be spaced out every 15 minutes. Snowshoes and sleds for pulling children along are suggested, depending on snow depths. The hike will be canceled in the case of bad weather. All donations from the tickets will go toward more lights for future night hikes. For more information can be found at the Dubuque County Conservation Facebook page. Our next article, East Dubuque Library hits speed bump with funding for expansion. Officials continue fundraising efforts to secure $400,000 in donations to pay off loan, by John Cruz, East Dubuque, Illinois. Looking to secure grant funding, officials with the East Dubuque District Library have taken out a loan for their library expansion project as they work to continue raising money. Library officials stated that in December, the library was issued a loan of $560,000 in order for it to meet a funding requirement deadline to qualify for a state grant for the expansion project. The library announced in October its intention to spend $1.6 million on a 3,000 square foot expansion and to add space for a community center, children's department, private rooms, and additional storage. At the time, most of the project was already largely funded through a handful of major donations, including a $400,000 grant from CVR Partners, which operates the local nitrogen fertilizer plants in East Dubuque, a $433,000 grant from Illinois Public Library Construction Grant Program, and a pledged $400,000 donation from an anonymous East Dubuque resident. All that remained was to raise the remaining $400,000 from local donations through a capital campaign. However, Library Director Brian Gomal said the grants from the East Dubuque resident and the state came with funding requirements before they would be distributed. The anonymous resident required a funding match of $400,000 in donations from local residents. Qualification for the state grant included a funding deadline that required the library secure $800,000 in funding for the project by the end of April. Quote, the state grant had an expiration date, so we had to borrow money in order to meet the funding threshold to secure the state grant, Gomal said. It ensures that we won't lose that funding, end quote. Gomal said that the $560,000 loan, combined with the $240,000 the library had already raised in local donations, ensured that the project would remain eligible for the state grant. However, library officials are now working to raise the $400,000 capital campaign goal as soon as possible in order to pay off the loan and reduce interest payments. Quote, it's unfortunate that we had to take out the loan, but we're still in the game, end quote, Gomal said. Quote, we're confident that we can fund it, end quote. Library officials declined to disclose the set interest rate for the $560,000 loan. Jerry Ensler, a member of the East Dubuque District Library Foundation, said the capital campaign for the project has raised about $250,000, with the donations continuing to steadily come in. He added that officials with the Library Foundation believe the remaining funds can be raised relatively quickly. Quote, we need to complete the campaign and earn the matching money from the donor family, Ensler said. People have been very much in support of the project, which is encouraging for us, end quote. Gomal said East Dubuque Library officials hope to begin construction on the project in April. Our next article, Dubuque event to end after planting lasting legacy. Make a Difference Day remembers will grow orchards throughout town in a final effort to better the community, by Kaylee Reese. An annual volunteer-driven event is ending its efforts after this year in Dubuque. Make a Difference Day will no longer take place. The annual event started in 2007 and in recent years has given out free household items to those in need. event co-founder and co-chairwoman Laura Russell said the decision was made since so many other organizations now meet the same needs as Make a Difference Day did. Quote, "That's the beauty of Dubuque," said Russell, who is also a Dubuque City Council member. "I think we have so many caring people. If you can identify a need, people will step up to meet that need, and I think COVID has really revealed that the great need out there," end quote. However, a partnership between event organizers and Convivium Urban Farmstead will create a lasting legacy for Make a Difference Day. Russell said the two entities plan to plant apple trees throughout town later this year that will let those in need of a healthy food item pick some for free. Quote, "My hope is that some of our volunteers help plant the trees and learn how to take care of the trees going forward, so they'll still get in that giving back mode, but in a totally different approach," Russell said. "Although it's sad to lose the event, it's near and dear to my heart, but we're still going to be giving back year to year," end quote. She said the trees will be funded with leftover funds from last year's Make a Difference Day, a total of about $3,600. Convivium co-founder Leslie Shalibi said Make a Difference Day organizers approached her about figuring out what to do with funds that would make a lasting difference. Starting an urban fruit tree orchard has been on Convivian's list for a while. Quote, "It's another way for us to grow food in an urban area that we're not already doing," Shalibi said. "We don't have a lot of fruit that grows around here, so this is a great way for us to get some fruit in the mix," end quote. While the details still need to be worked out, Shalibi said it's likely about 15 to 20 trees will be dispersed throughout the North End. She and her husband own several properties in that area. She expects the trees to function much like the garden beds that Convivium grows. While some easy access trees will have a fruit free for the taking, others will be primarily for the restaurant to use for its menu. With this last effort by Make a Difference Day organizers and volunteers, the event will mark 14 years in the community. Russell said it initially focused on affordable weather restoration efforts at area homes. Then it turned into a household essential store to meet the needs of area residents. Over the years, Russell said hundreds of volunteers have pitched in to help with the event. Quote, "I just really appreciate all of the volunteers that have stepped up over the years, all the wonderful people," she said. "That's the one part I'll really miss," end quote. Our next article, Dubuque Schools Help Staff with Navigating Emotions, by Ali Hinga. Dubuque community school leaders are developing a program to build up employees' emotional and relational skills, which can ultimately help students develop their own. Officials have started to offer their new social emotional learning Lumen training to select staff, with plans to enroll out the program to all teachers and other certified employers this fall. The training focuses on helping staff develop tools for self-care and navigating emotions. It ultimately will help them model those skills to students so they too can learn them. Quote, "This is going to trickle through the entire day," end quote, said Mimi Holzinger, the district's director of behavioral and learning supports. Quote, "It's not going to be a standalone product," end quote. A core group of district staffers developed these six-hour workshops based on the University of Dubuque's personal empowerment program and other emotional intelligence resources. The training offers staff lessons on topics such as navigating unpleasant emotions, empathy, appreciating diversity, and responsible decision-making. Quote, "We know that all learning is social and emotional, so this is a launching point to keep us going in this direction," end quote, Holzinger said. The workshop is being offered this spring to staff who will become facilitators to offer the training to other employees. Paraprofessionals also have the option to go through the training with the help of a United Way grant. Officials plan to roll out the training to all certified staff in August before the start of the 2021 to 2022 school year. They hope to eventually extend the program to other employee groups. Quote, "We do think it's a valuable training for everyone who works with our students," end quote, Holzinger said. A key goal is to help staff develop a better professional and personal balance and give them tools to navigate emotions, according to Adubin Elementary School Principal Ed Glasser. However, it also will help staff model and teach those skills to students. Quote, it would be hard not to share it with a child who is struggling, and some of them are very practical, end quote, Glazer said. Quote, it's very practical, short time in the moment things that might help an adult or a child, end quote. The skills included in the Lumen program align with social enrollment learning competencies adopted by the Iowa Department of Education. In outlining those competencies, state officials note that social-emotional learning for students starts with adults who practice those skills themselves. Holzinger said seeing adults model those skills can be powerful for children. Quote, it's hard for kids to really dig in on their learning if they have other issues that they're trying to navigate at the same time, she said. So if we can help them get skills and help our adults to have more skills, it's really a win-win, end quote. Our next article, Camp Courageous Pushes Forward with Annual Garage Sale by Mike Putz, Manchester, Iowa. And abundance of items for sale, along with losing important fundraisers as a result of COVID-19, has opened the Camp Courageous Garage Sale in Manchester earlier than usual. The camp, located near Monticello and serving individuals with special needs and their families, has run the garage sale in Manchester for nearly 40 years, but closes it during the winter months. According to CEO Charlie Becker, opening this winter makes sense instead of having a winter sale at the camp's Monticello location. Quote, the last 3 or 4 years, we had a garage sale down here at camp during the winter months when we aren't as busy with campers, he said. We would bring the surplus from Manchester down here, but the older we get, the smarter we get. We thought it would be easier if we left everything right where it was and opened the garage sale up there. We have an overabundance of items in Manchester and volunteers that want to help, end quote. He added the garage sale is an important fundraiser for the camp, and especially so this year when other camp fundraisers have been canceled due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Quote, traditionally, our biggest fundraisers are the Manchester Garage Sale, the Pineapple Gala, and an omelet and pancake breakfast, which were both canceled this year, he said. The garage sale is one of the few things we've had this year, end quote. The garage sale is open at 1121 East Main Street from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. Becker said mitigation strategies are in place, beginning from when items are dropped off to how many shoppers are allowed in the facility at one time. Quote, when people bring in items, we isolate them for a week or so before they go onto our shelves, he said. Everyone volunteering is wearing a mask. In addition, we only allow 10 people in at a time. When that 11th person arrives, we have them wait in their car until someone else leaves. But with a building with 20,000 square feet, everyone has room to move around. We are trying to keep people distance as well as our volunteers, end quote. Becker said the garage sale accepts cash and also is experimenting with credit card purchases this winter. People wishing to donate items may still drop them off, but are asked to limit items to small groups instead of large truckloads for the time being. Anyone donating items is asked to call the staff ahead of time at 563-927-2120. While this is the first winter the site has been open, Becker said it might continue. Quote, we will elevate it after the winter and evaluate it after the winter and see how it goes, he said. We have such great volunteers up in Manchester, and they do such an exceptionally good job for us, end quote. Our next article, Ask the Telegraph Herald, Can Face Masks Place Cards Hang from Rear View Mirror by Kaylee Reese. Question, is it illegal to have a person with a disability's place card dangling from your rear view mirror? Also, would it be illegal to have a face mask dangling from the mirror? What would any citations be if so? Answer, Iowa code mandates that disability parking place cards should only be displayed on a rear view mirror when a vehicle is parked, according to Dubuque Police Lieutenant Ted McClellan. The place card could obstruct the view of a driver when a vehicle is in motion, he wrote in an email to the Telegraph Herald. A citation could be issued to people who display the place cards while driving, McClellan wrote. The fine would be $200, but fees and court costs would bring the total payment to $285. However, he noted that this particular citation is given very infrequently, if at all. Quote, I'll be honest, in my almost 20 years, I don't know of anybody being cited for that, but the code is there, end quote, he said in an interview. During the COVID-19 pandemic, some drivers also have been hanging face masks on their rearview mirror. McClellan said a face mask hanging from the rearview mirror doesn't fall under the state's code related to obstructed views, but that's because this practice only recently emerged. Question, which vehicle has the right of way if one vehicle is stopped at a stop sign when leaving Lowe's on Menard Court and an oncoming vehicle is turning left from the street onto Crescent Ridge. Answer, the busy intersection long has prompted confusion among some drivers. McClellan wrote in an email that the vehicle turning from Menard Court onto Crescent Ridge would have the right of way in this instance. The vehicle stopped at the Menard Court stop sign would be entering the public roadway from a private drive, McClellan wrote. All vehicles entering roadways from private drives must yield to vehicles already on a roadway. Quote, it can be tough to navigate through the intersection when cars get onto Dodge Street, McClellan said in an interview, but we don't have frequent accidents there, end quote. Moving to the obituaries, Donna M. Hartman. Donna M. Hartman, 84, of Dubuque, died on Saturday, February 6, 2021. Visitation will be held from 4 to 6 p.m. Thursday, February 11th at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. Mass of Christian burial will take place at 10:30 a.m. Friday, February 12th at Holy Spirit Parish, Holy Ghost Church. Darlene S. Crawford, Dickeyville, Wisconsin. Darlene S. Crawford, 61, of Dickeyville, died on Sunday, February 7th, 2021. Private family services will be held from 9 to 10:45 a.m. Thursday, February 11th at Casey McNett Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Cuba City, where a private funeral service will take place at 11 a.m. Funeral services, Wayne C. Anderson, Dubuque, visitation at 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Friday, February 12th, St. Anthony Catholic Church, Dubuque, Massive Christian Burial, 10:30 a.m. Friday at the church. Melinda M. Deitzel, Cuba City, Wisconsin, visitation at 9 to 10:15 a.m. today, Holy Ghost Catholic Church, Dickeyville, Wisconsin, Massive Christian Burial at 10:30 a.m. today at the church. James T. Kane, Dubuque, visitation at 9 to 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, February 10th, Church of the Resurrection, Dubuque, Massive Christian Burial, 10:30 a.m. Wednesday at the church. Pauline J. Kelsey, Savannah, Illinois, services 10:30 a.m. Saturday, February 13th, St. John the Baptist Catholic Church, Savannah, Mass 11 a.m. Saturday at the church. Jennifer Lopez, East Dubuque, Illinois, Massive Christian Burial, 10:30 a.m. today, St. Patrick's Church, Dubuque. Miguel Ramos, Clinton, North Carolina, visitation at 3 to 7 p.m. Friday, February 12th, Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, Dubuque, services at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, February 13th at the funeral home. Moving to sports, college basketball, Indiana 67, Iowa 65, Franklin's last second basket sinks Hawkeyes. Cold shooting guard finds his range with 1.8 seconds left by Michael Merritt, the Associated Press, Bloomington, Indiana. Coach Archie Miller gave the ball to our man Franklin's for Indiana's final possession Sunday, despite his shooting struggles. The sophomore guard made Miller's big bet pay off. Franklin sank a 15-foot tie-breaking jumper with 1.8 seconds left to cap off a late rally that gave the Hoosiers a 67-65 victory over number 8 Iowa. Franklin had scored just 2 points on 1-for-9 shooting until the making of the winner. Quote, if you're going to take the last shot, that's the guy we wanted to get the ball, Miller said. He's our best guy, most physical guy, getting it to the basket. This one he didn't overforce. He got a little pull up, and that's part of his game, end quote. After a defensive stop gave Indiana 10-8, 5-6 Big Ten a chance to win it, Miller opted against giving the ball to his two top scorers, Tracy Jackson Davis with 17 points or Race Thompson with 15. Instead, he wanted Thompson to free Franklin with a screen. Iowa, 13-6, 7-5, thought it was in right position too. Coach Fran McCaffrey put the taller Joe Weiskamp on Franklin. Quote, it was a tough thing because they were in the double bonus, so Wisey doesn't want to foul him either, McCaffrey said. It was contested, so you've just got to tip your hat to him, Franklin, end quote. The Hawkeyes had a last chance, and it resulted in a strange sequence. A long inbound pass intended for Luca Garza bounced off the backboard and toward midcourt. Jordan Bohannon retrieved the ball and tried a one-handed heave, and that also bounced off the backboard. Garza and Weiskamp each finished with 18 points. Iowa has lost two straight overall, four of its last five, in both games this season to Indiana. This one got away from the Hawkeyes, who controlled most of the first half after jumping to a 17-4 lead, after Indiana closed on a 9-0 run to take a 33-31 halftime lead. Iowa responded with a 14-2 spurt to take at 45-35 lead early in the second half. The Hawkeyes is still 53-48 with 7 minutes and 25 seconds left, but Indiana retook the on Thompson's basket with 55.8 seconds left, made it 65-62 on two free throws from Jackson Davis, and eventually won it after Bohannon's tying three-pointer knotted it at 65 with 27 seconds left. Quote, coach basically called an isolation play, Franklin said. Race set the screen and I got going downhill and just hit it, end quote. Big picture, Iowa. The Hawkeyes have won just one game over the past 3 weeks. Garza had two of his lowest scoring totals this week too, hurt Sunday by foul trouble that kept him on the bench for the final 12 minutes of the first half. Did playing 4 games in 9 days wear out Iowa? Perhaps, but Iowa needs to find a solution fast. Indiana. The Hoosiers seem to have been on the verge of breakthrough victories through every time they take the court. This time, they finally got one. Indiana improved to 2-5 against ranked opponents this season, both against Iowa. And if they can add a couple more in the next several weeks, they just might make their first NCAA tournament appearance under Miller. Poll implications. Iowa has appeared in the top 10 for 11 consecutive weeks, marking its longest streak since 1986-87, while two close losses on the road against Big Ten foes might not hurt their resume much, it could knock them out of the top 10. Stat pack. Iowa. Wieskamp also had 8 rebounds while Garza finished with 2 rebounds. Bohannon scored 11 points, giving him 1,501 in his career, and 7 rebounds. Keegan Murray had 10 points and 6 rebounds before fouling out with 3 minutes and 9 seconds to go. After making their first 5 threes, the Hawkeyes finished 8 of 21 behind the arc. Indiana had lost its previous 3 home games and is now 5-4 at Assembly Hall this season. Franklin added 6 rebounds and 5 assists. Jackson Davis had 12 rebounds, his 7th double-double this season. Thompson had 6 rebounds. The Hoosiers shot 35.9% from the field and were 6 of 23 on threes. Up next, Iowa will try to rebound at home Wednesday against Rutgers. Indiana begins a 2-game road trip Wednesday at Northwestern. Our next article, College Basketball, Carter Gives UNI a Boost by Jim Leitner. Noah Carter has been playing with a lot more confidence lately, and on Sunday afternoon, it translated into a much-needed victory for the University of Northern Iowa. The sophomore who prepped at Dubuque Senior scored 25 points and grabbed a season-high 13 rebounds to lead the Panthers to a 70-67 win over Indiana State at the McLeod Center in Cedar Falls, Iowa. Northern Iowa improved to 6-12 overall and 48 in the Missouri Valley Conference play, while the Sycamores fell to 11-8 overall and 8-6 in the conference. Quote, I'm just trying to go in there every day, get better in practice, and continue to stay confident, Carter said. That's one of the biggest things, honestly, is getting confidence. The team is starting to play with more confidence every possession, every game, and we've starting to string some good things together, end quote. Carter finished in double-figure scoring for the 7th consecutive outing, and his 25-point performance missed his season-best output by just 3 points. He scored 28 against Western Kentucky in the season opener. Quote, he has been playing great for us, and quote, said Northern Iowa teammate Austin Fife, who scored 17 points and grabbed 8 rebounds on Sunday. Quote, he is really starting to get that confidence, shooting confidence for himself, and even becoming a better defender, which is something he really worked on in the offseason. That's a huge spark for us, especially with him being able to guard a bigger dude in the 4 position, end quote. Carter averages 11.3 points and 5.8 rebounds in 26 minutes per game. He played 40 minutes on Sunday and averaged 32 minutes in the previous 3 outings after seeing his playing time fluctuate for most of the season. Quote, he's just got more willpower. He is playing with more determination, playing with more discipline, and quote, UNI coach Ben Jacobson said, quote, it all started with him playing harder, end quote. Indiana State took a slim 35-31 advantage into the locker room at the half and held the lead for 33 minutes and 14 seconds of clock time. But the Panthers increased the defensive intensity in the second half to avenge a 4-point loss to the Sycamores a day earlier. Quote, honestly, I think it was just us battling, end quote, Carter said of the defensive difference between the two halves. Quote, we just kept at it. We were down, but we continued to battle. We got five some touches. We got some threes to finally fall, and we didn't give up. That was the main thing, end quote. Tyrick Key led the Sycamores with 18 points and 5 rebounds, while Julian Larry and Jake LaRavia each scored 14 points, and LaRavia collected 10 rebounds. Almanac, today is Monday, February 8th, the 39th day of the of 2021. There are 326 days left in the year. On this date, in 1587, Mary, Queen of Scots, was beheaded at Fotheringhay Castle in England after she was implicated in a plot to murder her cousin, Queen Elizabeth I. In 1693, a charter was granted for the College of William and Mary in Williamsburg in the Virginia colony. In 1910, the Boy Scouts of America was incorporated. In 1922, President Warren G. Harding had a radio installed in the White House. In 1924, the first execution by gas in the United States took place at the Nevada State Prison in Carson City as Guy John, a Chinese immigrant convicted of murder, was put to death. In 1960, work began on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, located at Hollywood Boulevard and Vine Street in Los Angeles. Let's move to the opinion page. Other View, Take Time to Aid People in Need by Scott Reeder for the Telegraph Herald. I hate a certain four-word string more than any other in the English language. It's an excuse for looking away. Decades ago, when I was a young reporter, I had just taken a new job with a newspaper and the staff was excited to soon be moving into a new building. One cold December night, a desperate woman called. She was in labor, and in that era before cell phones, couldn't get a hold of her husband who was working construction in the building we were moving into. It was past midnight and she didn't know if we could reach him. I told my boss that I was caught up with my work and could drive the 3 blocks to the construction site to get him. The boss looked at me and said, quote, it's not our problem, end quote. He ordered me to tell her we couldn't help. More than 3 decades later, I'm haunted by that conversation. I had been on the job for all of 6 weeks or so. I should have told the boss, quote, no, end quote, but I didn't. Instead, I sat at my desk until 1 a.m., knowing I had betrayed not only my own values, but those in which I had been reared. I grew up in a home where I never heard that phrase. Early on, my parents taught my siblings and me that we are our brothers and sisters' keeper. I remember when I was a teenager, my dad was driving it through a rough neighborhood in my hometown of Galesburg, Illinois. He saw an older woman lying on the sidewalk. Cars were buzzing by her prone form. He stopped and found she had fallen and broken her hip. He took 5 pairs of clean overalls from his truck and created pillows for her to be comfortable and had someone call an ambulance. He stayed with her until the paramedics carried her and the overalls away. Helping others means making sacrifices and getting your hands dirty. It's not always as antiseptic as writing a check to a charity, although sometimes that is part of the solution. While we might disagree on how best to help someone, we should never delude ourselves that we don't have such an obligation. Sometimes we have to say no to those in authority and pay the price. I should have done that decades ago, but I didn't. How did things end up for that woman in labor? I have no idea. That's what happens when you look away. You don't know how the story ends. As for the editor who said, quote, it's not our problem, end quote, he was out of journalism within a year. My millennial friends like to talk about, quote, trigger words, end quote, that resurrect past traumas. I'll be honest, I've long thought that was New Age gobbledygook. But then I heard someone say, quote, it's not our problem, end quote, and memories of that cold December night in 1989 returned to me. The most offensive part of that phrase is "our." It identifies a person with a group, a clan, a race, an employer that sets itself apart from others. The inference in the statement is if the person was part of our group, then he or she would deserve help, but otherwise it's not our problem. The Bible story about the Good Samaritan isn't just about helping others, it's about reaching across racial, cultural, and economic boundaries to aid those from groups than other than our own. Today, I carry 2 gallons of gasoline, a jack, and a host of tools in the back of my pickup to assist stranded motorists. Sometimes I'm able to help them change a tire or give someone enough gas to make it to a service station. One time, I just sat with a young man while his car was engulfed in flames alongside Interstate 55. I couldn't help him much, but at least he knew someone cared. When I think back 32 years to that woman whom I didn't help, I'm haunted by my inaction. A sin of omission is as bad as one of a commission. How do we teach our children not to repeat the kind of mistake I made? I've been wrestling with that as part of my 2021 resolutions. So I asked my daughters if they would like to help stock mini pantries or blessing boxes around Springfield, Illinois. They embraced the idea with enthusiasm. During this pandemic, many hardworking families are in need. Those who can should help out. Beginning this week, I'll take my grits to the grocery store to buy food that will leave at small stands across the city for families to anonymously use. Why am I doing this? Well, we want to help others, but I also don't want my children to grow up and ever say it's not our problem, end quote. Again, Reader is a veteran state house journalist in Illinois and a freelance writer, and that was his Other View article. The next Other View article, a 9-year-old girl, ill-trained police and cities need for more community help by Clarence Page, Chicago Tribune. Rochester, again, the video recorded pepper spraying of a screaming handcuffed 9-year-old black girl by police late last month has gone viral and it's painful to watch. It is even more painful when we recall another video released last fall of a mentally ill black man dying naked in the street after Rochester, New York police put a hood over his head. Our outrage following both of these scandalous strategies is further inflamed by frustration. Both incidents should remind us that in the tension between the need for law enforcement and police accountability, there are no easy solutions, but there are solutions. After video of the death of Daniel Prude, who was visiting from Chicago, stirred protests and a national uproar, Rochester Mayor Lovely Warren fired the police chief. The city also launched a new, quote, person in crisis, end quote, team of counselors and social workers to answer emergency calls for people, quote, experiencing emotional or behavioral turmoil, end quote. The program is burdened by potential miscommunication, though. It requires a caller to call 911 to request mental health services for themselves or call 211, the area's crisis hotline number, to seek help for someone else. Unfortunately, as a city spokesman told reporters, the call for the little girl came in as a domestic or family trouble crime report, not a mental health call, which would have been directed to the crisis team counselors. As a result, police were called to the scene. As depicted in a widely viewed footage posted to YouTube, chaos ensued. The girl, who is not identified, is seen screaming to be let go as police restrain her in a patrol car. When an officer tells her she's, quote, acting like a child, she, quote, end quote, she responds, quote, I am a child, end quote. Moments later, the video shows an officer pepper spraying the girl and leaving her crying in the back seat. Mayor Warren announced that the officers involved in the spraying would be suspended pending an internal investigation. But as in the case of Prude, the officers appeared to be ill-prepared for what they encountered. That's a major reason why, as I have written before, cases like these calls for something other than the conventional police response. A surprising number of non-emergency calls have less to do with law enforcement than with other social failures. Much of last year's political debate was embroiled in a call to, quote, defund the police, end quote, a misleading slogan that many reformers refashioned into the more helpful, quote, rethink policing, end quote. Thinking anew about policing encourages innovations such as Rochester's person in crisis teams, crisis intervention services of social workers and other counselors that Chicago and a growing number of other cities offer, but we also need civilian involvement at the neighborhood level. Cities plagued by high crime rates in recent years share similar problems with widespread distrust of police by local citizens and vice versa. Just hours before the incident in Rochester erupted, some mothers who have lost children to homicide announced a new national movement called Voices of Black Mothers United to raise awareness and organize the grassroots efforts at the neighborhood level. Quote, we're not saying defund the police because, yes, we want more police in our community, end quote, said Executive Director Sylvia Bennett Stone in an online news conference Friday. She lost her daughter in 2004 to a stray bullet. Quote, but we also want them to be accountable, end quote. That calls for constructive support by citizens whom police are sworn to serve and protect, said Robert Woodson of the Woodson Foundation, which convened the group as part of his 40 years of work with grassroots organizations. Quote, we believe the solutions come from the same zip codes as the problem, end quote, Woodson said. I wish them the best of luck. Other mothers have organized against violence and had some success and, in some cases, sad cases, tragedy. Two Chicago mothers, Chantelle Grant and Andrea Dudemeyer participated in daily vigils organized by mothers against senseless killings in 2015 until the two were fatally shot senselessly and cowardly at a troubled intersection in the city's Inglewood neighborhood. In the city's surge of violence, Chicago homicides in January hit 51, the highest for the wintry month in the past 4 years, continues. So does the need for better cooperation nationwide between police and the communities they patrol. Again, this other view opinion by Clarence Page, who is a recipient of the Pulitzer Prize in 1989. Page is a Chicago Tribune columnist and an editorial board member. He entered the Chicago Journalism Hall of Fame in 1992. Lifestyle in short, Avery Foundation of Dubuque reaches milestone, Telegraph Herald. The Avery Foundation of Dubuque has hit a milestone. The organization that serves cancer patients throughout the tri-states has awarded its 164th grant, pushing it past $100,000 in grants awarded since its first in December 2017, according to a press release. The organization serves cancer patients in Dubuque, Delaware, Clayton, and Jackson counties in Iowa, Joe Davies County in Illinois, and Grant and Lafayette counties in Wisconsin. Applicants can apply for grants to help with financial burdens during treatments, including mileage to and from clinics, meals, and lodging. Other assistance includes cost of comfort medications, medical equipment, or supplies not covered by insurance. A special prescription program also is available for uninsured or underinsured through Hartig Drug. Quote, reaching the $100,000 mark in the amount of financial assistance provided to tri-state area residents undergoing cancer treatments is an incredible milestone, end quote, said Nancy Dime, vice president of the organization. Quote, it says that the Avery Foundation is fulfilling its mission of being a supportive financial resource for people in need. It is also a beautiful reflection of the amazing generosity of so many local donors who have opened their hearts and their wallets to local cancer patients, end quote. Don't miss this. Groups to host outdoor women event. The Dubuque County Conservation Board and Dubuque Land Pheasants Forever will present the annual Becoming an Outdoor Woman from 9:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday, March 6th at the Swiss Valley Nature. The event will include presentations from local female outdoor experts, as well as sessions about campfire cooking, specialized knot tying, and a presentation from a local female Ironman who will discuss triathlons for beginners. Organizers ask that participants arrive prepared for being outside for one session around a campfire. Donations are recommended for lunch provided by Dubuque Land Pheasants Forever. Masks will be required when social distancing cannot be maintained. Space is limited and registration is required by visiting www.eventbrite.com/e/137816186925. More news in brief. Dubuque student receives a scholarship to study movement of pigs. A Dubuque student is receiving a scholarship to support student research of pork and swine. Abigail Schmidt of Thomas Jefferson Middle School received a $400 scholarship from the Iowa Agricultural Literacy Foundation, funded by the Iowa Pork Producers Association, according to a press release. A sixth grader at Jefferson, Schmidt is researching animal behavior and safe and proper ways to move pigs from one facility to another. Students will compete with their research projects at one of the science fairs and symposiums hosted in Iowa, including the Junior Science and Humanities Symposium, March 2nd and 3rd in Iowa City, the Western Iowa Science and Engineering Fair, March 5th through the 20th virtually, the Eastern Iowa Science and Engineering Fair, March 8th through the 20th virtually, or the State Science and Technology Fair of Iowa, March 26th and the 27th in Ames. Juvenile injured in crash in rural Galena, Illinois. Authorities said a juvenile was injured Saturday night in a crash in rural Galena in which icy road conditions were a factor. The juvenile from Scales Mound, whose name was not released, was taken by private vehicle to Midwest Medical Center in Galena for treatment, according to the Joe Davies County Sheriff's Department. The crash occurred at about 7:05 p.m. Saturday on West Watcher Road at its intersection with Farmstead Drive. A press release states that the juvenile was driving east on West Watcher, quote, when she came upon a slower moving vehicle due to icy road conditions, end quote. The juvenile hit the brakes, but the juvenile's vehicle slid into the rear of a vehicle driven by Stanislav G. Grozev, 36, of Park Ridge. The juvenile was cited with failure to reduce speed to avoid a crash. art project to enhance Dubuque bus shelters. A public art project will enhance the look of Dubuque's bus shelters. Art en route will provide sidewalk murals under and around 14 bus shelters throughout Dubuque, according to a press release. The project is hosted by the City of Dubuque's Office of Arts and Cultural Affairs in partnership with Green Dubuque and funded by a $25,000 national grant from Bloomberg Philanthropies Asphalt Art Initiatives. The project is open to community members of all ages. Participants may download, complete, and submit an art en route coloring sheet by March 15th. These designs will help guide an official open call for art expected to be held in the spring. Four skiers killed in Utah avalanche, Salt Lake City. Four Back County skiers in their 20s died when one of the deadliest avalanches in Utah history hit a popular canyon, police said Sunday. Four other people were also buried in this Saturday slide, but managed to dig themselves out and didn't suffer serious injuries, according to United Police of Salt Lake City County. The skiers were from two separate groups, and all eight had prepared with the necessary avalanche safety gear, authorities said. U.S. to re-engage with UN Rights Council, Washington. The Biden administration is set to announce this week that it will re-engage with the much maligned UN Human Rights Council that former President Donald Trump withdrew from almost 3 years ago, U.S. officials said Sunday. The decision reverses another Trump-era move away from multilateral organizations and agreements. U.S. officials said that Secretary of State Antony Blinken and a senior U.S. diplomat in Geneva will announce today that Washington will return to the Geneva-based body as an observer with an eye toward seeking election as a full member. Some churches reopen doors in California, Los Angeles. Some California churches opened their doors to worshipers on Sunday after the state revised its guidelines for houses of prayer following a U.S. Supreme Court ruling that lifted a ban on indoor services during the coronavirus pandemic. Quote, "The morning we declare that this house will be a house of freedom," end quote, announced Pastor Brittany Koopman at Harvest Rock Church near Los Angeles, one of the churches that sued the state over the ban. She led a socially distanced indoor crowd in prayer before Sunday service, which was also streamed online. Cheney, "I will not resign over censor, Washington." Representative Liz Cheney, the third-ranking House GOP leader, said Sunday she was undeterred by a censure from Wyoming Republicans and criticism from some House colleagues over her vote to impeach Donald Trump and will not resign or back off her repudiation of the former president. Cheney said the oath she took to the Constitution compelled her vote for impeachment, quote, "and it doesn't bend to partisanship and it doesn't bend to political pressure," end quote. Slain FBI agents remembered, Miami Gardens, Florida. A slain FBI agent was remembered for his intelligence, keen, and wit for an investigation that took down the largest known child pornography websites during a memorial service. Agents Daniel Alfin, 36, and Laura Schwarzenberger, 43, and were gunned down Tuesday while serving a search warrant at the Broward County home of a child pornography suspect. The service for Alfin was held at the Miami Dolphins football stadium the day after a service held there for Schwarzenberger. And that does it for today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Monday, February 8th on Iris. I'm your reader, Erin. You can access today's reading online at iowaradioreading.org. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a wonderful day.